Please stick around after this episode to hear who won the pound of coffee from last month's engaged listener campaign. From the 2015 OLC Annual International Conference in front of a live audience, I'm Kelvin Thompson.
And I'm Tom Cavanaugh.
And you're listening to TopCast, the Teaching Online Podcast. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Kelvin. So we sound different today.
Yeah. It's like,
we have a voice.
You shouldn't do that really ever.
No, don't ever do that again. So for those of you listening, maybe for the first time, we are taking TopCast on the road. We got literally on the road, the 417 here in Orlando, yeah. And drove about 40 minutes.
How was your drive?
It was dark this morning.
Right.
Like, I hope the coffee is.
Yeah,
and so we are now at the lovely Walt Disney World Resort here in Orlando, Florida. Maybe you've heard of it. We are at the Online Learning Consortium Annual Conference 2015.
Yes.
Yes.
That's right.
So you did some pre-work to kind of come up with the topic for this particular episode. And I think that will be a very interesting discussion sort of about the future of online learning.
Yes.
But before we get into that, mm-hmm. the question that we always have to ask mm-hmm. is, Kelvin, what's in the thermos?
The thermos. In the thermos today, Tom, is a thematically selected coffee.
What are the odds?
Yeah, it's amazing. Let me pour you a little bit here. You know, here's the thing, not to be too cutesy. I know you don't like it when I'm cute, but, you know, there it is. I would say this is hope for a better future in a cup.
Is that the name of the cup? Is that
no.
Sumatran?
Well, you're on the right track.
Am I?
You might not know this. I'm not always that geopolitically aware. Goodness, I'm not even that regionally aware. Don't watch the news because I don't want to be depressed. I try to keep my mental health in check. But, you know, we used to have a colleague, Dr. Safari Wambaleka, from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the entire time that I worked with Safari, I never really checked in. He always had a smile on his face, and I didn't realize how bad things were back in his homeland.
Happiest guy I think I've ever met.
He's the most, Safari, if you're listening, we love you. But things, apparently, you know, everybody talks about Rwanda, but the Congo, things have been tough, right? And I was reading this article in Forbes. It was a dated article. It's from a couple years ago. But because they've experienced civil war and all this bad stuff, violence and so forth, because it used to be a big coffee growing region, and there just haven't been jobs, there haven't been anything. And so thanks to some non-governmental agencies, some cooperatives and some venture capitalists who got behind them, they're rebirthing the coffee growing industry in Congo, and what you're drinking is some of the bringing it back to life first couple of crops here. So as a result, we're seeing people who actually have jobs, who are able to pay for education for their children and not have violence in their homes, and so hope for a better future.
Congolese coffee.
So this is Congo. It's right in the eastern side near Lake Kivu, so it's Kivu Nyiragongo washing station gathered coffee.
So your commute today was actually longer than mine.
Yes.
You came from
all the way
Africa.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It is very good. Stronger than I'm used to, because, as you know, I like to, as my dad says, you know, froof up my coffee with cream and sugar. But
yes.
But it's excellent.
I didn't bring any of that for you today.
No.
I probably should have. Anyway,
yeah, well.
So I know that we're talking about the future. Right?
Hope for the future.
Hope for the future.
Boy, that could be applied in a lot of ways.
That's right. How's your prognostication, Tom?
The great Karnak here.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. I'm happy to make predictions. Just don't hold me to them. Right?
You know, that's true. If I ever told you this, I gave up predicting because in about 1998, there were internet service providers all around and stuff, and I thought, that's a death knell for AOL. You know, they'll be out of business in 2 months. And no. You know, I figured people could just get direct internet access. Why would you want to pay for a services? And I totally misread that entire situation.
You were just early because, you know, AOL's not doing so great.
Well,
now.
Yeah, and I guess that's true. And I was thinking about that. That is sort of true. But if you were actually trying to do something operational or make money or something, my timing being bad would not be a good thing.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, so here's a prediction.
Okay.
I think these computers might be the future.
You mean as in they're going to take over?
Yeah, maybe. In some cases, let's hope, because that's actually part of what I'm going to predict.
Oh,
yes.
We're gonna be slaves to the machine, Tom.
Yes. Well, maybe not take over.
I thought this is hope. We're looking for hope.
We're looking for hope, right?
This is utopian, not dystopian.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Yes. So, do you want to begin with some context?
Sure. Give us some.
Well, I saw Peter Senge speak one time, and he talked a lot about innovation, and he's got these awesome quotes like "innovation is a team sport." And one of the things he said that really resonated with me was, "Don't fight the energy, follow the energy." Hmm. And I'm seeing the energy of the higher education technology space going in certain directions right now that I think it's worth watching. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you want me to maybe list a couple of those.
Yeah, sure. Go with that.
I think adaptive learning is a real thing.
A real thing.
It's a real thing.
Vaporware.
Well, I mean, can I say this?
Please, you know, hey.
MOOC. I'm not sure MOOCs are a real thing, you know, or at least what they are now. Uh-huh. I think MOOCs could evolve into something. Uh-huh. But the hype that surrounded MOOCs a couple of years ago, I think the bloom is off the rose on MOOCs.
And just as a caveat, right, I think what you're framing is what many would refer to as ex-MOOCs, not so much the C-MOOC variety the provenance of this that term came from, because many good things about the C-MOOCs.
Right.
But yes, the stuff that gets overhyped and all that.
That's my point.
Yeah.
But I think adaptive learning, it's very early. It's the nascent kind of germination of the adaptive learning movement. But I think there's a lot of promise there. And the technology will hopefully only improve. Practice will only improve. And the promise of it is to be able to have an effective, personalized experience for students at scale. Mm-hmm. And if we can do that, then I think it will take off.
Yeah.
So that's one.
Okay. And what about and we've talked about this a little bit before, some of these themes, but what about the contrasting point of view a little bit, what about the human-to-human interaction piece of that? You know, as we personalize, that's great for the individual, but what about the social constructivist, whatever? I mean, just the social learning theory, there are some that would argue that we're creatures of relationship and that learning happens best in a community and all that. What do you do with that?
You got to ask me those questions. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think that you can adapt an environment, a learning environment for a student without necessarily completely sacrificing that social aspect of it. It requires a lot of intentional design and thought in how you're going to do that. And it may be that you don't have the kind of complete freedom to accelerate or have, unfettered competency-based kind of programs, and maybe that's okay. Maybe that's in a better service to the student. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's too much potential for adaptive learning, at least right now. We'll find out in 5 years I'm right, for us to dismiss that as maybe just the fad du jour. I think there's more there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, so here's a question, vamping on that. So you say that, you make this quote-unquote prediction, but that doesn't sound to me, and I know something about you, that doesn't sound to me to be just something that you're watching from afar saying that's a prediction. You've got some skin in that game, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, in my role at UCF, I am responsible for trying to point our organization in certain directions, and we've got limited resources to spend on them, and you kind of make a bet sometimes on certain things, and you're hoping that you're right. And adaptive learning is an area that we're making something of a bet on. If it fails, UCF's not going away.
Hopefully, let's hope.
Hopefully, I'm not going away.
That's right.
but I think there's enough there that it's worth that bet. And there are a couple of things like that. Another example is badges. And I think badges.
We don't need no stinking badges. Somebody had to say it. You were all thinking it.
Everybody was thinking it. So I think badges is in that same category. However, I don't think it is as accepted as potentially adaptive learning is. And we've talked about this before. I've been in meetings where people have literally, like vice provosts have literally laughed in my face. When I've brought up badges and, oh yeah, gold stars and all that. So there's not a lot of understanding yet, I think, broadly, outside of like our community here, of what those things mean. Yeah. But when you start to look at what they are, take the label off of them, code academies are just exploding, and we've got, you know, certificates and certifications. And when industry starts to say, I will hire you if you have this credential or this ability, and they don't care if you have a degree anymore, I think it's something we have to start to pay attention to. Because that's our, you know, the currency of the realm for us is the degree that's accredited. And if that suddenly loses its value in favor of these micro-credentials, I think that there's a there.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that I think could potentially be, can I hedge my prediction?
Yeah, always.
Could potentially be something 5 years
possibly
from now.
Possibly, it'll either work or it won't.
It might be, perhaps, be something that we might do.
There's a 50% chance of it happening, working, or not, something like that. Well, you know, you said something a moment ago, two things that I think might be worth checking out a little bit. One, you said, okay, well, we don't have unlimited resources as an organization, and so you want to try to pick a good horse, right? Pick a winner kind of thing. And partly you're talking about innovation, right? You're talking about the future. You're talking moving things forward. And so what's going to play into something and what's not. And I think there is a function or a piece of leadership that is, you know, kind of checking out what's on the horizon. Do you agree with that? I think that's a leadership function, yes?
Yeah, it is. I heard a definition one time that leadership, decisions are what leaders make in the absence of data, you know? In the absence of any sort of data that tells you what you should do, leaders have to make a decision. And you try and make it as informed as you can. Yeah. But if all the data were there to tell you what to do, you don't need a leader.
Yeah,
it's obvious what you should do.
Yeah.
So it helps, I think, in like our own personal environment that we've got pretty supportive, for the most part, senior administration.
Yeah, they get this.
They give us the resources that they can afford to give us. We always want more, but it's true. Not everybody is as fortunate as that, though.
No.
I've had many conversations, even at this conference week, where people have said, I wish my provost could be in the room right now, Tom, that we're talking about this subject. We were talking about adaptive learning yesterday. And I get that, because I'm fortunate our provost understands it and is supportive as much as he possibly can be.
Yeah. No, I think that's good, and I think that leadership function, I mean, that's certainly absolutely true of positional leadership, but I think that's true. You know, a mentor of mine said years ago, leadership is influence, right? And we all have our spheres of influence, and to some extent, all of us need to be attuned to what's going on and making good decisions. But, you know, there's something else you said, too, that because you've talked, I think in other episodes, we've discussed this a little bit about piloting, adaptive learning, personalized learning, and so forth. And so it's not just a passive watch and see, it's getting in and actually shaping how this plays out, right? Our colleague Joel Hartman likes to quote Alan Kay saying the best way to predict the future is to invent it.
Yeah.
And I think there is something to be said for getting it on the ground floor, right? And so I think we're trying to do that with adaptive learning, personalized learning. So what would you say about that? What is the role of kind of watching and seeing versus taking an active role in shaping things as a leader?
As a leader, yeah. All leaders still have to report to people.
Don't screw up is your advice. Is that what you're saying, basically?
I think it's a delicate dance because you look at, you know, as I said, kind of where the energy is. But then you've got that Alan Kay concept, which I also agree with, which is, you know, build your future.
Yeah.
I heard a speech one time by Art Kirk, who was the president of St. Leo, and he talked about, you know, we're a small liberal arts school, Benedictine school, and there's no way we're going to climb the ladder to compete with Notre Dame and Boston College and Georgetown. So he said, we went and we built a new ladder. and made themselves into a completely different kind of institution that has been very successful. But they changed the rules of the game. We're not going to be Notre Dame. We're going to be this over here and be awesome at it. And so I think that there's some truth to that. But you also want to make sure that if, like, for example, we're betting on adaptive learning, it's not in a vacuum. Yeah. It's looking at the larger context of the space and seeing, yeah, that there are some reasons why we think we need to build that future. It's very, as I said, very nascent. There's not any kind of template that we can follow. So in that regard, I think we are. But there are some things underneath it that that inform that decision and make it maybe ameliorate the risk slightly. So I have a couple other predictions.
Yeah, I was going to ask. You have
do you have? I haven't given you a chance to.
That's all right. You keep going.
All right.
You keep going.
So one, and I'm going to be a little provocative here at the OLC conference.
Keep your clothes on.
Good thing it's a podcast.
Oh, if only. Yeah. If only it was a two-way remote podcast.
So one idea I've been thinking a lot about. I know OLC has been a co-sponsor of the Babson survey every year, and been watching those numbers, and I think in 5 years, online learning won't be such a novelty. I mean, it already kind of isn't.
Yeah.
It definitely isn't in this room, but you get out of here and you talk to other faculty, and certainly the general public. There's still an awful lot of naivete about and ignorance of what online learning is. I think in 5 years, that may be much less of an issue. And in fact, having an online program will not be a differentiator. Everybody's going to have online programs. And it won't be just put the program online and students will come to it because of the convenience offered. Everybody's going to have that kind of a convenience. And so I think that there'll have to be other kind of qualitative differentiators for you to be different in the marketplace for your online programs. And whatever they may be, quality-based, cost-based, the local brand name university that you recognize, student services, you know, veteran-friendly, whatever it is, there'll have to be other things in the package besides it's online. Because I think we'll start to see that that market get saturated.
You think we'll still use the term online?
I don't know. You got a better one?
No. Well, digital learning shows up a lot lately. I don't know what that is either. Networked learning, I don't know. Some things are, you know, this, the way language evolves, some things are vestigial and stay on, and you think they would be long past, but yeah, so it might stick.
Maybe personalized learning.
Maybe personalized learning. That. Yeah, I guess I kind of agree with that a little bit. I've thought about this some, and I don't think that there's going to be any killer app or killer platform that's going to take over all this stuff. Maybe not even adaptive learning or personalized learning. I don't think there's going to be a game changer. I guess from an evolution revolution standpoint, I'm looking more at evolution. And I think some things, there'll be ebbs and flows. But you know, I think about Joseph Schwab, the curriculum theorist from the early 70s. He talked about these several common places. He was talking about curriculum making, but in our educational settings of there's learners, there's instructors, there's subject matters, and then there's context or milieu, you know, and everything else is transient, right? And that isn't likely to change, right? Maybe some of the way the recipe plays out. And so, I mean, I think there's themes like mobility, right? Being less tethered, I think that's a thing. Things like intelligent tools, the you know, adaptive engines, the integrated planning and advising services and stuff like that will help us. And certainly proliferation of more and more content, media content. I think all those things are helpful in a piece of things. So I don't think there's any one thing. But you know what? I thought AOL was going out of business in 1998, so what do I know? What do I know? So,
well, maybe I'll add one more before we wrap up. And
make it a good one.
I don't think it's unique to online, but I think online can be part of the solution. And if you look at the broader spectrum of, and we've talked a little bit about this in the past, what are the big problems in higher ed today? Serving particular kinds of students. We saw some statistics at the conference yesterday about 77% of wealthy students get a bachelor's degree, and 9% of of Pell eligible students get a bachelor's degree.
It's horrible, right?
It is, and that's a big problem, as is student retention, as is serving diverse student populations in every sense of that word.
Mm-hmm.
How can online learning be part of the solution for that? Will, I think, in many ways determine the future of online learning. If we can be at the table offering a solution set beyond just convenience as our value proposition, then I think the future is very bright, because we're solving big problems then,
yeah.
As opposed to just how do I make my course, you know, easier for students to access.
No, that's excellent. That is good. That's good stuff. So I guess in a sense, I don't want to put too much of a spin on this, but I guess some of the themes that I'm hearing from a leadership perspective, leaders, whether those are positional leaders or wherever, lead where you are kind of things, leaders read the signs of the times and then position themselves accordingly in order to exert positive influence in their areas. Would you agree with that?
I think that's the Kavanaugh-Thompson doctrine.
Ooh,
yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
You've heard it here, folks. You heard it here first, folks. Well, that's a good place to wrap it up.
I think so. Yeah, so, my coffee's almost done, so there
right.
you go.
I'll give you a refill. Well, until next time, for TopCast, I'm Kelvin.
I'm Tom.
See ya. Thanks to all of you who demonstrated engagement with TopCast last month. We saw a lot of tweets, photos, and blog postings. You can see some of these displayed on this episode's page within the TopCast website. However, there can be only one, and the name of the person randomly selected to receive a pound of gourmet coffee from among all of those who engaged this month was Dr. Melissa Venable. Melissa writes for the Inside Online Learning blog, teaches online, and is active as a speaker and conference presenter. Congratulations, Melissa, and to all who participated last month.